Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. Hey there, and welcome back. So today we have with us Dina K. White. And Dina is a decluttering expert known for making sense of decluttering. In her signature nitty-gritty style, she now shares the life-changing power of God's grace in our messiness. Dina is the creator of the No Mess Decluttering Method, and much to her own surprise, a decluttering expert. Dina shares realistic home management strategies and a message of hope for the hopelessly messy in her books, Organizing for the Rest of Us, Decluttering at the Speed of Life, How to Manage Your Home Without Losing Your Mind, and her newest book, Jesus Doesn't Care About Your Messy House, He Cares About Your Heart. So of course, we're going to have an incredible, beautiful conversation today about all the things that we struggle with internally and externally, from our mind to our headspace to cleaning up the mess and bringing us closer to where we need to be in life. So thank you, Dina, for being our guest today. And I'm super excited for you to share with our listeners a little bit more about you and what got you started into the works that you do today.
So I write about the thing that I would have never thought I would write about. Like, I would have laughed and maybe cried if you told me this was going to be what I wrote about for a living. I write about decluttering, about getting your house under control. I started in 2009, which is 16 years ago at this point. Like, that's crazy. But I started writing about this because I wanted to be a writer, but I didn't feel like I could start writing because my house was a total disaster. So my house had always been a disaster. My space from the time I was a baby all the way through, like any space that I touched turned into a total disaster, right? And so it was my big struggle. And I thought, I want to write, when I found out what blogs were back in the day and realized, you know, I've got to get my house under control first. Like, I can't take on another creative thing that consumes me because that'll make me just ignore it more. So I was like, no, I got to do this. And I was sitting in church the day before my second child went to kindergarten. And I was just going to have one kid at home, so I wasn't going to have to coordinate nap times anymore. And I was praying, and I was not listening, honestly. But I was praying, and I was frustrated because I had been trying for a year and a half to get my house under control, even though I had always tried before. But now I had this goal that I wanted to start blogging. And the next day was the day that I should start, right? Like, it felt like this is the perfect time to start with one kid at home and I should be able to do this thing. And I still couldn't do it because my house was still a disaster. And so I was praying out of frustration that God had not answered my prayer, because I had prayed my whole life, please make me organized. Please fix this thing about me. Please change me. I don't want to be like this. I want to get my house under control. And God said, right about that. And I was like, okay, that's actually a really good idea, God. Okay. So I thought, okay, I can write about that. In my mind, it was going to be temporary. It was a practice blog. I was going to write about my house for a couple months, get it perfectly under control while learning about this thing I wanted to do. And then I could start writing about the things I actually felt called and qualified to write about. And joke's on me that this is actually the thing that he had planned for me all along. So as I started writing, I realized that, you know, as people, now, just to be clear, it was anonymous in the beginning. Like, I didn't even tell my husband I was doing this. I definitely didn't tell any friends, family, nobody. And I made up a fake name, set up a new email address so no one would ever trace it back to me. But because of that, I was being completely honest because nobody I knew was reading it, right? And I was just like, I've got to figure this out. So I wasn't making excuses, nothing. And people did start to read it, and they told me, the things you're saying are the same things that go through my mind. Like, I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one, but that's what they started telling me. And I started to see who these people were that were reading and relating to what I was saying. And they were highly creative, very driven, successful, intelligent women. And I was like, oh, okay, this is this is related to how my brain works, right? Like this is, it goes along with the creativity, this struggle with physical stuff, right? And so here I am writing about this. It took about 2.5 years before I was willing to actually teach anyone anything. For years, I said, do not listen to me. Like, why in the world would you want, because people were asking, they're like, teach us how to do this. And I'm like, no, not me. I'm not the person to teach you how to do that. But I finally realized my place in all of this is I can tell you how to go from completely overwhelmed to, okay, I can do this, right? And that was actually the piece that was missing for a lot of people, because most people who write about organizing like it. And their brains work very differently from mine. And so, you know, there were things that were like super obvious to people that didn't think need to be explained, that I was like, that was the piece I was missing. So that's where I come in and I teach that.
That is wonderful. And it's, I got a couple notes here, a few things that you had said that I wanted to point back to is when you said that you were praying, but you weren't listening. And in those quiet moments of that prayer time is really where those ideas spark. And we don't realize, oh, that was there the whole time, but that's God speaking through us, giving us that idea. And for you to say, God said, write about that.
Yeah.
So it's, I think it's pretty cool how when we get so caught up in trying to figure out the what and the how and just all the overwhelm to even get started on something, but we know that we need the change in our own personal lives, that the simplicity is in that moment. And it's just really inspiring what you just said, because sometimes that's the confirmation and the assurance that we are in the right path, even though we might feel like it's so mundane. Like, who wants to talk about decluttering? Like, I'm a hot mess. Look at the mess around me. Who wants to read about that? Who wants to hear about that? But you were obedient in it because it now set you up to intentionally change, but that accountability to start writing about it and sharing your experiences, right?
Right. Right. And like I said, it was never intended mm-hmm. for me to teach anyone anything. I literally thought this is a practice thing. This is a way for me to start writing, to learn the things I'll need to know later when I'm writing about things that other people would want to read, right? But I, at the same time, it was blogging. It was the days of blogging. And so it's, in order to learn about blogging, I was doing the things, like we used to have these roundups. I don't know, you look much younger than me, but I don't know if you remember the days, but they would do things where like a big blog would say, like there was one called Works For Me Wednesday, right? So it was like, share a tip that works for you. And so she would put on her blog this thing where you would go and leave your link. And so I was doing all of that as a way to learn about blogging, right? So even though I wasn't telling anybody I knew in my real life what I was doing, I was wanting to learn how to grow. And through that, I was actually meeting other people who were relating to what I was saying. But it was a total surprise to me. Like I thought that the first person who ever read my blog would tell me I was a horrible mother, a horrible person, all the things that I thought, like, what is wrong with me? And would say, you shouldn't be sharing all this stuff. And instead, people were like, yes, thank you for saying the things that nobody's ever said that they hadn't heard other people say before.
Right. It's giving women that voice for those thoughts in our head. And when we think about sometimes the negative and the critic that lives inside, we think we're struggling all alone. And who thinks like that? Who speaks like that? And you validated them in a sense of where they were seen in a way that they hadn't been given before, and giving them the voice, the words for what was actually going on inside their head. And so when you talk about this declutter, it's more than just the physical. It's more than just the things in your eyes that you see are taking up space in your room. It's about the headspace too, right?
Is, but I do want to be clear, you know, one of the things I learned about myself, and here's the problem, is a lot of people who write about decluttering will try to convince you to declutter, which part of the issue is that I didn't need to be convinced to declutter. I just needed to know how. Like, and so when people would spend a lot of time explaining the benefits of decluttering, I was like, thank you, thank you. How do I actually do this? Right. And so it was frustrating to me because it made me feel, because I couldn't prove to them by showing them my space that I got it and I understood that I needed to declutter, right? And so I couldn't really argue with that. But at the same time, I was just feeling like I was waiting for them to explain it. What was the question again? Sorry, this is how my brain works.
You pretty much answered it, because it's, yes, we have that mess in our head, but then we have that mess in the space that we're physically in as well. And so they go twofold, because we have to feel that we're validated in the thoughts of it, because that kind of gives us the oomph, the courage to take that first step and learn how to. And that's a lot of what you talk about in your book and in the works that you do as well, right? The how to, and that's a teaching component.
Right. Exactly. And that's where I come in, and I go, how to go from this overwhelms me so much that I shut down completely to, okay, I can actually go all the way in this, right? Because the how to that was skipped in most of the people who talk about this stuff is the most basic step. You know, like the first step of I have a 5-step decluttering process that I've figured out working on my own home, you know, and the first step is trash. Well, some people are horrified by that. They're like, you have trash in your space? And I'm like, yes, and so do you. Like, everybody does. We all have it. The first step is trash, whether you have one piece of trash, or for a lot of people who are struggling the way that I did, trash might be the vast majority of it. You know, like it could be whatever it is, it gives you a step to get started. And when people are like, oh, no, well, that's obvious. Everybody should know that you should get the trash out of there. It's not that I don't know that. It's that I need permission to say, this is what I'm going to do as the first thing, because I need a first step. If I don't have a first step, I look at the space and I'm completely overwhelmed. So as we get trash out, it gives us something to do. It helps us to start seeing the individual items instead of the pile, because the pile is overwhelming. The individual items are less overwhelming. And so then I'm ready, and I'm moving toward being able to actually make real progress, but I have to start with the trash, right? So somebody needed to say, and I hear this from people all the time, like, thank you for giving me permission to start with the trash, instead of skipping that like it's supposed to be obvious, because then I'm completely stuck because I'm just seeing the pile and it's just so completely overwhelming.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And it's, you know, when we look at that whole approach, what you'd mentioned, overwhelm leads to shutdown. It said analysis paralysis.
Yep.
We just feel like we're spinning our tails in circles, and we're like, I just need a direction. Just give me my first starting point to get started. Once I know where to start, then the rest I can do. And I think when we are surrounded by that overwhelm, by the messiness of both, again, internal and external environments, as you said, give yourself that permission to take that first step. So let's talk about the steps. Like, how would you encourage somebody to take that first step?
Yeah. So it is to start with the trash. And what you just said about the internal and the external, like the things go together. Absolutely. They're affected by each other, right? They for sure are. But so many times when it feels like I need to know the why, right? Like, I need to understand before I get started. And in reality, you can go ahead and get started with the trash before you know anything. Because when I say trash, I actually mean trash. I don't mean you deciding that this thing is trash, or you having a conversation in your head about how your mother would have said this was trash, but I'm crafty, and so I actually think I could use this one day, blah, blah. I'm talking about the most obvious trash. And doing that action, going through the steps, helps me get to the point where I do understand, because I am able to see the space better. So my steps are, start with the trash. The next is the easy stuff, which is anything that already has an established home. There's no decision to make, right? Because you mentioned analysis paralysis. There's no analysis. I'm just going to get that out of here. Like, I went on an archaeological dig one time, which I was not the archaeologist. I was just the grunt worker, right? You know, and we basically would just scrape away dirt. That's what we would do, because you can't see what you're dealing with until the dirt is gone, right? Mm-hmm. And so the dirt has to be removed, and the trash, the easy stuff, that's stuff that you can get out of there. But when you're thinking, oh, this is going to be a bunch of big decisions, I need to start with this thing that I got to make a big decision about, it's too overwhelming. But you get out the trash, you get out the stuff you already know what to do with it, you get out the obvious donations, okay, things that you don't have to analyze whether or not. And by the time you get those things out, then you're able to go, okay, now I actually see what I'm dealing with, and I can make this hard decision about this water container that I'm like, do I need it? Do I not? You know, I still don't ask those questions. Like, I still have all fact-based questions. So the next would be, if I needed this water, I'm thinking water bottle, but it's not. It's a cup, right? Okay, sorry. That's how, see, I'm a writer and I can't even think of the word cup. But anyway, but if I needed this cup, where would I look for it first? Okay, so that takes the emotions out of it, right? There's no, is this a good cup? I'm not going to ask that. Do I love this cup? I'm not going to ask that. Does this cup, whatever? I'm just going to ask, where would I look for it first? And it's a fact. It's not where would it be, because if I knew where it was going to be, it left during the easy stuff stage, right? Like, I know what to do with it. I don't know what to do with it. No idea. Where would I look for it first? I picture myself thinking that it's going to be a 3-hour search for it. And yet, where's the first place that I would look at the beginning of what I thought was a 3-hour search, right? And then I'm going to take it there. Now I'm going to face the reality of that situation. Is there room for it there? If there's not, am I willing to get rid of something to make room for it? If I'm not willing to get rid of something else to make room for this, it's not that important and it can be donated, right? So I go through that and it's all very fact-based so that the emotions are not the thing driving it. I'm dealing with the facts. And then that gives me the confidence and I get to feel the emotion, right? Like, if I love this cup, even though it leaks, which it doesn't, but even if it leaked, but I have all these feelings about it, I don't have to go, but it leaks, but I love it, but it leaks, but I love it. I just have to go, am I willing to give space to it? Am I willing to get rid of something else to keep this? Even though anyone else in the world would say that leaks, why do you want it? I'm like, I have space for it. It can stay, right? And so it allows me to experience the emotions, but not be driven by them, but not be controlled by them, right? And so that, therefore, I'm able to place the value on it, but I'm not using the value as my deciding factor.
Right. That makes complete sense. And just for reference, when we talk about trash, we're not just talking about like the pizza boxes and empty milk cartons and things like that.
No, we are.
But we're talking about other things as well. So I just wanted... Yeah. So it's a broad spectrum of trash.
Yeah, and, but it's obvious. When I say trash, I mean obvious trash to you, okay? Because here's the thing. The packaging is such a, you know, you take the thing out of the package and for some reason you don't immediately throw it away. A lot of people do. By people, we tend to not, right? Like, it just doesn't cross our mind to do that additional step, right? And so when you look at a space that's cluttered, there is always trash. Maybe it wasn't trash when you put it there, but the time that has lapsed between the time that it got there and the time now, it is now obvious to you, right? Like, I'm not asking you to analyze whether something's trash. I'm just saying, look for obvious trash. And if it's there, go ahead and get it out so that that gets you moving. And all of that builds the momentum that you need for the cup that's emotional to you. You know, like, you're more ready for that because you've already experienced success. If you had to stop after the obvious donations, your space is better than it was before. You have been successful. You're not done, but you have been successful because we don't put things in piles and leave a bigger mess later.
Right. Okay. Thank you for clarifying that. Because anyone who's listening, I was like, is it just like the trash that comes weekly? Like, it's beyond that. It's a...
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Okay. And so when you had mentioned about the emotional component, I had one of my clients, I remember she was telling me one of her, a family member had passed on and she was in over her head with having to clean up the mess of the loved one's home. And she said, she's a hoarder and she's got all these things. And she goes, I realized that this person, their loved one, was holding on to all these things because of emotional and sentimental saving. And do you find that that's very common? Then I know that you express that, but when you're holding on to it, is it really emotionally driven, or is there another component to that as well?
I mean, I'm sure there's other components. I'm trying to think of specific examples, but absolutely. Like, I am highly sentimental about my stuff, right? I'm a very forgetful person. And so I like the physical object to remind me of the thing. What I didn't realize was that holding on to all the things for all the sentimental reasons actually made me overwhelmed and caused me to be more forgetful. And therefore, that being more forgetful of what I had because I didn't know, because it was in piles and, you know, cabinets and things, then it made me more worried that I was going to forget things. And then I would hold on to more things and hold on, you know. So, but the same thing that I do for anything, you know, then this is the thing is sometimes people say, well, sentimental stuff has to be different. And I'm like, no, sentimental stuff has to follow the same thing, right? Like this item that is highly sentimental to me, I'm going to ask the same question. If I needed it, where would I look for it first? I'm not saying, will I need it? That's not, we're not going to ask that question, because that's where you can spin out and you're like, but I can't let go, but I can't. What? It's where would I look for it first and give it a home? You know, like my little bulldog back there, right? You know, like I got that when I went to Hong Kong when I was in my early 20s, right? And it could be in a box somewhere, right? Of stuff for stuff that I got on a trip that I'm just like, well, that's sentimental to me, right? But instead, it's a, if I need it, where would I look for it first? Let me give it an actual home. If it is truly sentimental enough for me, then it deserves a space in my home. It deserves a place to be, not in a box, but in an actual spot in my home. That might mean that I have to get rid of the other decorative item that I bought when I was just trying to decorate my office. You know, like, you know, so those things, and I come in and I go, these two things are both great, but this one deserves space more. So I'm going to give it more. And so it lets me honor that sentimentality without being paralyzed by it.
Totally makes sense. I'm thinking of in my own experiences, and we had just recently moved. So we had downsized and downsized and downsized, and I could not believe just the amount of stuff. And what I also realized is that when we had a bigger home, we just filled up with more stuff. And it's like, that kind of became this analogy and metaphor for how are we living? We're constantly chasing that more. So we get like the bigger home to fill it with more stuff that we don't even need. And then when the time comes to downsize, because you realize, why am I living in this big space that has no use? And that's kind of the purpose of what you're teaching, because it creates more of this peace and calmingness inside when we can declutter so much of what we don't need. And to your point about the forgetfulness, I have ADHD. I have like the attention fly of a gnat. And if it's not right in front of me, I will forget about it. And that's what I learned also in this moving process. It was like, how many of the same items did I end up buying because they weren't in the forefront of my mind? So it's out of sight, out of mind. And it just became this clutter. And when I needed that, I couldn't find it. So there would be this panic and this overwhelm. And I would run out to buy another thing of it, or it would freak me out and time would lapse and I would just be like in this angry mood, like I couldn't find my favorite thing. And, you know, so it sends you down the spiral. So there's the ins and outs. And I love what you're talking about because it's so relatable. And those listening, you don't have to be in a place where surrounded by trash or things, but what are we holding on to that has taken up so much of your mental bandwidth?
Yeah, I call it my clutter threshold. So what that means, it's not my aesthetic preference. A lot of times people assume, oh, that, you know, I don't like a lot of stuff. I mean, what can you handle? Okay. What is easy for you to keep under control? What's the level of stuff that's easy for you to handle? So for me, my house was constantly out of control. I had more stuff than I could handle. So my mother has a very high clutter threshold. She grew up on a farm, you know, 30 minutes from town. And so they had the mentality that you better have it on hand, and because you're not going to be able to just run to the store, right? Mm-hmm. And so she has that mentality, but she can handle it. She can, like, she will go into a cabinet that is packed full and will move the things that she needs to move and get the thing that she needs to get and move things back and neatly shut it. I don't have that. I'm not like that. I am the, oh, okay. And I move all this stuff and I grab the thing and then I leave and then it's just all over the counter, right? And then it stays that way. And then it's overwhelming and it develops, you know, draws more things to it, becomes a pile. And then I'm over. So for me, I had to realize I was brought up with this mentality that you need to go ahead and have the thing that you might need someday. And if you can get it for a great deal now, you might as well, you know, go ahead and get it. But I have a low clutter threshold. I can't handle that much stuff. And so the only answer was for me to have less stuff. And But I didn't know this till I started decluttering. And one day I went, oh, I can do this. Like, this is not hard. I know what I have. I know where it is. I can get to it. I can do this. And what it made me realize, that's the point at which I can keep my house under control. So that's the goal, is to declutter to the point where you can keep your house under control easily and it's not overwhelming to you anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yes, good tips. And so I'm curious to know, why do you think that is, that individuals struggle with the organization aspect of it? Is it habits or another thing? I'm kind of trying to think of ideas here, because I know for me, obviously, it's you're equipped with your brain set as well, but habits too, because sometimes I had a hard time repeating that habit enough that it just became that autopilot behavior.
Yeah, it's still not autopilot behavior. So I do talk a lot about habits. So when I started, I was completely overwhelmed in my home, right? And I was like, I don't know what to do, but I do know that my friends whose homes are not a total disaster and they're not embarrassed to open their front door if somebody shows up, their kitchens are always under control and mine is always a mess. And every time I try to clean my house, I spend 5 hours in the kitchen and then I'm exhausted and I never get to the rest of the house. And so I was like, I got to do this. So I was like, I'm going to start as small as I could possibly start. And I'm just going to try to keep my dishes done. That was transformative, right? And so it's the number one habit that I teach people to start with. If you don't know what to do, do your dishes. If you don't, you know, anytime you're overwhelmed and you're like, oh, what? Do the dishes. It gives you the thing to start and it makes a huge impact for all the kinds of reasons that I've talked about for hours, you know, online. But that, yes, it's a habit, but it still is something I have to remind myself of. Like, it is not like, oh, I'm going to do, the dishes are done. I didn't know that. I just did the dish. It's never going to happen, right? So I call it a pre-made decision. It's, this is what has to happen. If I will do my dishes before I go to bed, then everything runs more smoothly. I've learned it from doing it. I've learned it from messing up and not doing it and seeing how it throws everything off. I've learned it the hard way. If you miss 3 days and you're like, I was doing so good, okay, do the dishes again. And the thing that you're going to learn through doing this backup of dishes that you had not had to do because you'd been doing really well is a learning experience. And all those things contribute to, this is why this is a pre-made decision. And therefore, I have to do it. But I have to often remind myself of that. So I think wishing for or wanting to or working toward it not being something I have to think about, I've pretty much given up on that. Instead, really, truly understanding through the doing and the doing it wrong and the doing it right, understanding through doing is the motivation that I need to make sure that this pre-made decision actually gets acted upon on a daily basis.
Totally.
Another thing too, can I say real quick? Because sure. You said something about organization. Organizing and decluttering are not the same thing. And most of the time, if you are looking around thinking, oh my goodness, I'm so disorganized, I've got to get organized. In reality, you need to declutter. It is rarely an issue of organization. It is generally an issue of needing to declutter. And I actually, separating those two things and giving myself permission to just declutter and not worry about organizing, because organizing is problem solving. It also is a motivation to go out and buy a bunch of stuff, right? Like bins and all that kind of stuff. So instead, by saying, I'm just going to declutter and I'll organize later, I actually achieved the things that I had wanted from organizing through decluttering, and realized in most cases, I don't need any organizing and systems and all that kind of stuff. I just needed to get out the excess, and then I could see, access, use, easily put back the things that I actually kept.
Yes. Okay. So when I think of organizing, it's just kind of putting things back in its place of where you found it. But yeah, there can be a whole nother spectrum of organization, yeah. Like you said, with containers and this and that. And we can get pretty wild in all those things.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. There's a something for something. But when you're talking about starting with the dishes, and for those that are listening, like, gosh, I'm trying to envision this. How do I get started? And I would assume your advice would be start in the room that you're most commonly used, that would create that feeling of clutter? Like you said dishes first. Is that because the kitchen is where you spend a lot of time?
If you don't know what to do. When, as far as decluttering goes, the way I prioritize decluttering is according to visibility. So start in your actual place where people will enter your home. And I know some people are like, but that's where I spend my most time and blah, blah, blah. Like start there, because here's what happens. If you start in the most visible place in your home, you see the progress that you're making. You see the impact of what you're doing. For some reason, when you get this itch to declutter, it's very tempting. And this happens for lots of people. Okay. It's very tempting to start in the top shelf of your linen closet, right? Because you're like, that's the thing that's been driving me bananas and I'm going to go deal with that right now. But when you start there and you spend all day working hard on decluttering and then the doorbell rings and you're still embarrassed to open your front door, then it feels like, well, what was the point of that? Or you know, your kids come in or whoever and you're like, they say, what have you been doing? And I'm like, I've been decluttering. And they're like, you know, okay, you know what? I don't see any. That is so defeating. But when you work in a visible space and you walk by that space and you're like, that looks so good, it increases your decluttering energy and helps build that momentum for you to keep going. Where if you're decluttering in a, you know, obscure place, you spend all that work and you're not, so it zaps that decluttering energy, right? So that's how I prioritize. I start in the most visible space. I'm inspired to declutter again sooner. The people in my house are seeing the impact of what's happening, you know? And the next time I start decluttering, which is sooner, I go back to that visible space, get it back under control. The first three steps will get it back under control. And then I move to the next visible space where it took me 3 hours the first time. This time it took me 7 minutes, right, to get it back under control. And then I spend my time on the next most visible space. Do the same thing the next time. I'm inspired to declutter again because my house is looking so much better. I go back to the first place. I spend 3 minutes there, 7 minutes in the second place, and then the chunk of time in the third place. You know, and that's how we build the actual momentum. Because what I used to do was like work in this space and it wasn't really decluttering. I was just stuff shifting, right? So I'd work in this space and then I would like, oh, that looks amazing. And this space was out of control, right? And so then I would work over here and then I would like, and it would just felt like I was never getting anywhere. That's how I do it.
Totally makes sense. Totally makes sense. And so all of this is a process and it's about having discipline and that feeling of control in a space where we feel like we're out of control because of our surroundings. I'm going to talk about discipline and control for a moment. I'd love your take on that.
I don't know. Did you see my face when you said discipline?
Discipline is not everybody's favorite word.
No. Well, here's the thing. Let's talk about the word consistency. Like how okay. many times have you said, have all of us said, I've just got to be consistent. I've just got to be consistent. Well, I have come to decide that consistency is a myth because the reality is when your goal is consistency, I'm not saying it doesn't matter. Of course it matters, right? But when your goal is consistency, that is an overwhelming goal. And you cannot achieve that goal today. But what you can do today is throw away trash or do the dishes, right? So if you're like, okay, what she's saying about the dishes, I get it. I got to keep those under control. My goal is to keep my dishes under control. Actually, your goal is to do your dishes today. Actually, if your dishes are overwhelming because you've put them off for 5 days, your goal is to do as many dishes as you can do today. And that is the thing that actually moves you toward consistency. But when you're looking at it as a, I'm so overwhelmed right now, consistency is not the goal, right? Like the goal to, so my decluttering process, the big shtick with my decluttering process is I call it the no mess decluttering process. We do not create a bigger mess, right? We don't pull everything out of the space, which a lot of people, including me, think, I used to think that that was what you had to do because that's what people would say to do, right? Like the first step when you're decluttering is take everything out and then just put back the things that you want. Well, I would take everything out. I would look at the space and go, so amazing. And then I would turn around and be like, you know, completely overwhelmed and shut down. And then life would happen and I had little kids and somebody would start bleeding and I would have to walk away, you know, so it just didn't work. So instead, what I do is step by step, we're removing one item at a time, making a final decision about that item. trash coming out and going in the trash bag or the recycling bin, that's a final decision, and that final decision has been acted on. So this space is better than it was, even if I get stopped in the middle. I keep going through the steps item by item, and that means that I can work in any amount of time that I have available, right? Where discipline is the thing that I would think whenever I would pull everything out of a space because I thought that's what I had to do. I made all these piles on the countertops or on the floor in the hallway or whatever. And I would think, I have just got to push through. I've got to push through. But then I would shut down out of overwhelm. And then I would look around and go, well, now not only do I have clutter, I also have no discipline. And I'm also, so I'm a failure, right? So instead, to shift it and say, I'm going to make this space better, I'm going to go item by item, that actually changed everything, because then I was able to say, okay, whatever amount of time I have, if I have 5 minutes, if I have 30 minutes, if I have 5 hours, I'm going to follow this process and I am going to make progress. And that's what actually changed my house, where all the time before, where I was like, well, it didn't work last time. I didn't have the discipline to finish last time. So this time I'm going to say, last time I thought it would take me a day. You know what? It'll probably take me a whole weekend. Okay, well, I got to call my mom, get her to take the kids for the weekend, right? And then I would try for a weekend and I'd be like, well, that still didn't work, right? Because I shut down and I didn't finish. I didn't have the discipline to finish. So next, okay, I'm going to wait for a week with nothing to do. Well, when does that happen, right? And then, okay, I'm going to wait for my kids to go to school. Okay, I'm going to wait for my kids to graduate from school. Okay, I'm going to wait until I'm retired. Like, this is the story that so many people have, to where instead you say, you know what? I'm going to do things in a way where whatever time I spend on it, it's going to make a positive impact. And changing into that mindset is actually what got me to where I wanted to be. All those times when I thought I had to do this huge pull everything out, it actually, that was self-defeating, but getting stuff out, you know, is the other thing. The other thing too is, when something is decluttered, it means it has left the house or it's been given a real home. Therefore, I don't have to manage it anymore, right? And so it requires less discipline, right? So I'm like, I am solving that problem, so I don't have to manage as many things, deal with as many things, by just getting it out, and then it achieves that thing that I was wanting.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I hadn't considered that. Yeah, so discipline just comes through the processes, and it becomes almost, you don't even call it discipline. It just is, because the way you set up the process.
So many times I thought that the answer to my problems in my house was to be different than I was.
Oh, okay.
Right? Like, I was like, I need to be different. I need to think differently. I need to do things differently. Of course, yes, I needed to do things differently. But I wanted to be different than me. Instead, when I said, you know what? This is how my brain works. This is how I am. Instead of fighting against that and trying to do things the way that the naturally organized people say that they should be done, it's not to accept how my brain works is not an excuse for my house to stay messy. It's freedom to find a way and do things in a way that actually work for my brain and how I was created, right? And so that releases that shame, and it allows me to move forward and actually make the progress I wanted to all along, because I'm not trying to have a different brain and a different personality.
Mm-hmm. I like that you brought up about the freedom and finding a way to break free of that shame. Because how many of us, those listening as well, are being held back by that shame? And shame in the context of not necessarily having to declutter, but shame from something in our past and our experiences that we're afraid to be seen about it because it feels very shameful, because we know that we should be better or do better, but we're stuck kind of in that shame loop. I'd love for you to unpack that as well, because I think that's what I'm hearing is in this narrative, and even in my own thoughts of things that I'm struggling with. And I'm thinking, well, maybe I don't open up or share, or not just of the fear of, I don't know how to get started, but maybe there's some shame holding me back because I feel like I should have this stuff figured out. I should know how to do this. And there's a lot of those shoulds in our narratives as well.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that, I mean, I get emails from people all the time, and I would say consistently the turning point for a lot of people finally being able to get their homes under control. Yes, they find the methods, but the thing that they say over and over again is finding out I wasn't the only one. Realizing I wasn't crazy. Realizing there wasn't something wrong with me. Okay? The fact that my brain works differently from the brain of a naturally organized person is not a flaw. It's just that we're different. I mean, how boring would the world be if we were all the same, right? And so the world needs people like me who can completely ignore their house in order to do some big project, right? But at the same time, I don't want my house to be like that. And so there are ways for me to go with this way that my brain works. Because I think when you add on, especially when we're talking about spiritual stuff, right? Like, that's the point of this book, is that Jesus doesn't care about your messy house. This is, especially as a Christian woman, you know, and we won't get into all the reasons why this has been allowed to persist as a, you know, misunderstanding. But if I already struggle in my home, okay, like the biggest misconception people have about people whose houses are messy is that we like it that way. Oh, she must just like living that way. And I mean, that's so offensive, right? Because I can't prove to you that I don't like living this way because my house is a mess. But at the same time, I don't like living this way, right? Like, I just need to know how. So as I'm working on my house, and as people are, you know, as I'm working on my house, if I then also feel like it is a spiritual failure because I've been told, you know, Christian women should blah, 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 whatever, then I am like, okay, not only is this already something I struggle with, now you add on the spiritual layer, and then it feels completely unconquerable, right? So my goal in this book is to take away the shame factor by diving into exactly what it is. Let's have this conversation and remove the shame so that you have that freedom to actually move forward. Because when it feels hopeless, it feels like, what's the point of even trying, right?
100%. Yeah. And that's what I think for me, and just my own experiences with shame, it just gets you feeling so down and low on yourself that you just essentially give up. You give up hope, you give up trying, and you just say to what you said, what's the point? Yeah. And there's this defeat. And then we just succumb to, well, this is who I am, and this is the mess I've made, and there it is, and I'll just be in this. And so we can go down those deep, dark, depressing paths. But I love how you're bringing this into the spiritual component, where this isn't, it's not about you, and there's a way to find that freedom. Yeah. So I'd love for you to share a little bit more about the spiritual side of things. Like, you talked about early on at the beginning of this podcast that God gave you this, in this quiet moment, a simple command, right about that, to now you have your books, podcasts, all the works that you're doing, you're teaching, you're leading, you're doing all these things just by simply saying, I could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I assumed when I started that God was going to show me something along the way that was going to make it, oh, I get it now, right? Like, oh, okay. You know, I assumed I had missed some spiritual principle or some verse or something somewhere that was going to change everything. Like, it's this whole like thinking it's somehow a spiritual issue that this is a struggle for me. And instead, as I worked on my house, God was also teaching me through the studying that I was doing just the reality of grace. I'd always known that grace is the only way to get to God, right? Like, I knew that it's only through the grace that Jesus provides. But at the same time, when you have this idea that I'm supposed to be, you know, this is some failure and this is whatever, it just gets all kind of mixed up. And so as I was learning and really understanding I wouldn't say the first time, but I was really internalizing this understanding of it is literally nothing I can do gets me closer to God. Nothing, right? Mm-hmm. It is only what Jesus has already done and my faith in that. And as I was learning that and as I was working on my house, God was showing me, Dana, I never cared about your messy house. I care about your heart. It's a heart issue. Okay. It is. He's always seen my heart. He understands the reasons why this is a struggle for me. He created me with the brain that I have on purpose. It was not a mistake. Right. And so as I learned to accept that, God showed me this is not a spiritual issue. Stop making this a spiritual issue, because when you make this a spiritual issue, you get your eyes off of what actually matters, which is Jesus and God's grace, right? And so that then took the shame away, which then allowed me to make progress, right? But it all has to, like, it's all part of the discussion. And that's where this book comes in. So I had my first three books, I did not include spiritual content, because a lot of times when Christian women write about cleaning and organizing and all that kind of stuff, and do, I know they don't intend this, right? But as the person who struggled so much, it felt like now we've piled on spiritual guilt onto what was already a frustration for me, right? And so it was very important for me to be like, this is not a spiritual issue. So we're just going to talk about the how-to. But everything in my life is spiritual, right? Because I'm a Christian. And so that is really important to me. And so I wanted to share the faith side of this and really tackle that head on. So that's where this book comes in. And that's why the title of this book is so blunt, because a lot of the people who follow me are not Christians and can be very turned off when I talk about Christian stuff, right? So this is not a bait and switch. I'm being very honest with you. This book is about Jesus. It's not about cleaning. It's about Jesus.
Oh, I love that. Yes, yes. And your book's title is Jesus Doesn't Care About Your Messy House. He cares about your heart. And so that is upfront who you're serving,
yeah,
with who the book is for. And I wrote down something you had said, and maybe this is something that's resonating with me too personally, is spiritual guilt. Because it's, we feel there's this conflict of the doing and the knowing, and that could raise some spiritual guilt where you start asking yourself, am I even a Christian if I don't do X, Y, and Z? And if I'm thinking this, if I'm believing this? And so there, I think that resonated with me. I'm probably in a timely season that I'm in as well. So I think you wrapped that up very clearly. And I think, you know, as the works that you do are so needed, not just from, again, the physical, but that spiritual and then the inner and the outer, right? So how we can have that quote unquote harmony and this peace, but the real peace is by walking in your spiritual faith, because that's where our peace comes from. And now the cleaned house and the decluttering, that's kind of a perk. That's kind of like the bonus that comes after it. But what you said, you took your eyes off of, yes, this is the mess, but where is my eyes and my focus on? And as you're focusing on what God has called you to do, the rest of it just kind of felt like it was easy to follow, because you weren't focused on this big monumental mess per se, but what is easy is just following what Jesus said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that. I love that. And so for our listeners, how can they learn more about you? How can they get their hands on the copy of your book and books? Because you've got few books, and then your podcast as well.
So the title of a blog that came to me in that moment where God said, write about that, was A Slob Comes Clean. And that was, I did not want to use that. I didn't want to call myself a slob. But yeah, so I'm still at aslobcomesclean.com. You could also go to danakwhite.com. You can search for me. If you search my name, you got to put the K in there, because there's that guy who is the UFC guy that's Dana White. And that is not me. You're not in any way related. So but yeah, you just got to put the K in there. I'm on YouTube, Dana K. White, and podcast. So just A Slob Comes Clean or Dana K. White, and you'll find me on all the platforms. And yeah, so you can get the new book. I'm not sure when this is going to come out, but they're on the website wherever books are sold. It's in all the different formats, the audiobook and the Kindle and all the ebooks and paperback and all that. So.
Awesome. So of course, all that will be in the show notes below. So be sure to give Dana K. White a follow. And if you get a copy of her book, let her know how this resonated with you. And really, again, as creators, and why we do the works that we do is to help transform not only our lives, but to impact those of others. So let Dana know that this episode resonated, and just be in touch, because obviously Dana's here to help, lead, and serve. So thank you, Dana, for being our guest today.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.